The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's stories include 5% raises, tax cuts, limits on emergency powers are in the budget, and oil falls as Biden faces calls to tap reserves. Lawmakers released what could be the final North Carolina state budget Monday, proposing an average of 5% raises for teachers and state employees over the next 2 years, along with income tax cuts and increases in education spending. Governor Roy Cooper has not said if he'll sign the budget, which would put some limits on the governor's powers during an emergency. Republicans, who have majorities in both the House and the Senate, are proposing a compromise budget with some proposals that Democrats oppose, but claim that they have enough Democrats on their side to pass it, even without Cooper's signature, which could mean the state will have a full budget for the first time in years. The budget drops some controversial policy provisions from earlier versions, including one requiring teachers to post all lesson plans online. Votes are expected over the next 3 days in the Senate, then the House, with the Republican Majority General Assembly sending a comprehensive budget bill to the Democratic governor by Friday. That could mean North Carolina has a budget that becomes law by the end of November, nearly 5 months into the fiscal year. If the governor doesn't sign it or veto it, the budget would become law after 10 days. The state budget would spend $25.9 billion in the current fiscal year, which already started July 1st, and $27 billion in the 2022-2023 year, according to Senate leadership. The rainy day fund balance will have $4.25 billion by the end of next year. Representative Jason Sain, chair of the powerful House Appropriations Committee and a head budget writer, said that teachers and state employees will get an average 5% raise over the next 2 years. Also, teachers in 95 counties described as low wealth, all outside 5 urban counties, will get additional state funding to supplement teacher pay. The 5 counties not included are the urban counties of Wake, Durham, Mecklenburg, Guilford, and Buncombe. It's going to be a good addition and a good thank you to the teachers across the state, Sain said. He said it adjusts some for the discrepancy between rural and urban counties. The total spending on that new supplement is $100 million in recurring funds. Is it ever enough? Probably not, but it is a nice way forward, he said. Teachers and state employees will also all get bonuses of at least $1,000. Non-certified public school employees, which includes cafeteria workers and custodians, as well as community college staff, would make a minimum of $15 per hour after 2 years. Cooper and Republican legislative leaders negotiated for 2 months in secret before finally leaving the table, not with a deal, but with enough negotiations to include some priorities from Cooper and other Democrats. Sain told the News and Observer on Monday that Republicans have enough Democratic votes to override a potential veto and then some. Both the House and Senate passed earlier versions of the budget with veto-proof majorities, but that didn't necessarily mean Democrats would override a veto later. The compromise budget mirrors the Senate's earlier tax plan, which would reduce the personal income tax rate to 3.9%, starting with a reduction to 4.9% next year. It would completely phase out the corporate income tax over 6 years. Republicans said the tax cuts also include a provision that would eliminate the tax on military veterans' pensions. One issue that the governor doesn't like, but Republicans do, is a policy provision to put limits on states of emergencies and related executive orders, which stems from the long-running coronavirus pandemic. Saint said the powers provision is not a poison pill. Limiting the powers couldn't be soon enough for many in my caucus. We don't believe any one person should have that much control and that much power over an extended period of time, he said. The budget includes a provision that would require agreement from the rest of the Council of State, who are the 10 statewide elected officials in the executive branch, within 30 days of an order. After 60 days, the General Assembly would have to agree to an extension. Both of those time frames are longer than what had been proposed by Republicans in previous legislation. Saint said that while the pandemic's not over, the provision says we're not trying to impact what you're doing currently today. Though many of us would like to see that shortened, but it does give us some time frame, some understanding that by the time we get to January 1st, 2023, that we have changed that law, he said, describing it as antiquated. North Carolina is still under a state of emergency. Comprehensive Medicaid expansion is not in the budget, an issue that did not make it through final negotiations. Saint said Monday that there are not enough Republican House votes to support it as part of the budget. However, it will be studied in a committee between legislative sessions. For more North Carolina government and politics news, listen to the Under the Dome Politics podcast from the News and Observer and the NC Insider. And you can find it at link.chtbl.com/UnderTheDomeNC. Next, oil falls as Biden faces calls to tap reserves. Oil fell as President Joe Biden faced more calls from members of his own party to tap the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to curb surging gasoline prices. Futures in New York sank as much as 1.8% Monday. Senate Majority Leader Charles Schumer urged Biden over the weekend to release oil from the nation's emergency reserves, saying consumers needed immediate relief at the gas pump. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm told CNN that the president is evaluating the tools he has available, including a release from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. However, a release from the strategic reserves would only be a short-term solution and possibly worsen the problem, said Phil Flynn, senior market analyst at Price Futures Group. When you release oil to lower prices, it doesn't solve the underlying problem, which is demand is growing faster than supply, said Flynn. As the U.S. mulls a crude supply release, Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates signal that OPEC will continue to be cautious in its plans to raise output. The group has been adding 400,000 barrels a day of production each month on paper, although its members have failed to pump that much in practice so far. The modest release comes as oil has surged to multi-year highs, as economic recovery and a global energy crisis have fueled demand. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies are particularly wary about the stability of demand in the coming months. Already in Europe, a handful of smaller consuming nations have reimposed restrictions as a result of COVID-19 cases. Biden will also meet virtually with China's President Xi Jinping, the world's largest oil importer, later on Monday. The Biden administration's deliberations to release oil from the SPR comes as gasoline prices have hit a seven-year high, a political problem for Democrats who are experiencing sinking approval ratings. Even climate-conscious Democratic senators urged the president to act quickly to dampen prices by either capping SPR or banning U.S. crude exports. Similarly to an SPR release, a U.S. oil export could do little to provide relief to American drivers while upending global markets. All the while, Italy's Eni said the oil may hit $100 a barrel due to a lack of investment from energy companies. Maybe it can reach that, CEO Claudio Descalzi told Bloomberg Television, but not for a long time. Next, key reason for supply shortages, Americans keep spending. Take a step back from the picked-over store shelves, the stalled container ships, and the empty auto showrooms, and you'll find a root cause of the shortages of just about everything. Even as the pandemic has dragged on, U.S. households flush with cash from stimulus checks, booming stock markets, and enlarged home equity have felt like spending freely again, a lot. And since consumer demand drives much of the U.S. and global economies, high demand has brought goods shortages to the U.S. and much of the world. Add the fact that companies are ordering and hoarding more goods and parts than they need so they don't run out, and you end up with an almost unquenchable demand that is magnifying the supply shortages. That's where a big problem comes in. Suppliers were caught so flat-footed by how fast pent-up spending surged out of the recession that they won't likely be able to catch up as long as demand remains so robust. That's especially so because Americans, still hunkered down at home more than they did before the pandemic, continue to spend more on goods, electronics, furniture, appliances, sporting goods, than on services like hotels, meals out, and movie tickets. All that demand for goods, in turn, is helping to accelerate U.S. inflation. Unless spending snaps sharply back to services or something else leads people to stop buying so much, it could take deep into 2022 or even 2023 before global supply chains regain some semblance of normalcy. Demand is completely skewed, said Bendaya Vakil, CEO of Resilinic, a consulting firm that helps companies manage supply chains. This has now become more and more painful by the day. One reason people may eventually stop spending so much is that everything simply costs more now. Consumer prices in the U.S. skyrocketed 6.2% over the past year as food, gasoline, autos, and housing catapulted inflation to its highest pace since 1990. The laws of gravity suggest that the cumulative effect of so much inflation will eventually exert a brake on spending. For now, though, manufacturers foresee no end to heavy demand and no end to beleaguered supply chains or spiking inflation pressures. A chronic lack of computer chips has forced Ford Motor Company, for instance, to revamp its system of ordering parts that require long periods from order to delivery to try to address shortages. It's highlighted that the just-in-time operating model that has been prevalent in autos may not be the right operating model. Ha Thak Teng, Ford's chief operations and product officer, told analysts. Smaller companies, too, have felt compelled to build up as many supplies as they can so they can still make products. Morarity's Gem Art near Chicago, a family business for 40 years, has been stocking up on gold, silver, and platinum to make necklaces and rings, desperate not to run out of supplies as holiday orders pick up. We're ordering a lot more than what we actually have orders for, just in case, said Jeff Moriarty, the marketing manager. Even a normal post-holiday shopping lull, though it might help, isn't expected to be enough to unclog ports, speed shipping traffic, or allow factories to replenish inventories. The baseline expectation for improvement is around the middle of 2022, said Oren Klatchkin, lead U.S. economist for Oxford Economics. But I think the risk of that happening later are fairly high. Though Americans have increasingly ventured out in recent months, the balance between spending on goods and services remains skewed. The pent-up demand that followed the economic recovery is still tilted toward goods like furniture and cars, and less toward haircuts, concerts, and restaurant meals. Though services spending has grown in recent months, it isn't nearly enough to close the gap. Since April 2020, consumer spending on goods has jumped 32%. It's now 15% above where it was in February 2020, just before the pandemic paralyzed the economy. Goods account for roughly 40% of consumer spending now, up from 36% before the pandemic. U.S. factories have tried mightily to keep up with the demand. Production rose nearly 5% over the past year, according to the Federal Reserve, despite periodic ups and downs, including disruptions to auto production caused by chip shortages. Imports have narrowed the gap between what America's consumers want and what its factories can produce. From January through September this year, the U.S. imported 23% more than in the same period in 2020. In September, thanks to surging imports, the U.S. posted a record deficit in goods trade. Imports topped exports by $98.2 billion. Voracious demand for goods has accelerated as more people have become vaccinated in wealthier countries. Yet in poorer countries, especially in Southeast Asia, the spread of the Delta variant forced new factory shutdowns in recent months and crimped supply chains again. Only recently did it start to recover. At the same time, many U.S. workers have decided to quit jobs that had required frequent public contact. This created shortages of workers to unload ships, transport goods, or staff retail shops. Ports clogged up. Last month, 65 ships waited off the California coast to be unloaded at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach, 2 weeks' worth of work. The average wait, 12 days. That has since worsened to 78 ships with an average wait of nearly 17 days, despite around-the-clock port operations beginning in October. Before the pandemic, ships had set arrival times and went straight to a berth for unloading, said Gene Scroca, the L.A. Port's executive director. Now with Asian factory output at record highs, the port is moving record levels of goods, yet it's not enough to meet the demand. Scroca doesn't foresee the shipments easing even next year. Retailers have told him they plan to use the slower months of January and February, if they actually are slower, to replenish inventory. As with ports, rail lines are moving more goods. Through early November, freight shipped by America's railroads was up 7.5% from a year ago. Truck shipments were up 1.7% in September, yet there aren't enough drivers or trucks to move all the freight. In China, too, manufacturers are struggling with shipping delays, container shortages, and cost increases. Shantou Lima International Limited, which makes children's toys in the city of Shantou, expects sales to fall 30% this year because of delays and costlier shipping. The most serious problem for us is being unable to deliver goods on time because of the difficulties in securing freight containers, said Frank Xi, the company's general manager. A lot of things have gone beyond our control and expectations. Philip Richardson, an American who manufactures loudspeakers in Panyu near Hong Kong, said orders have increased 400%. A key reason is increased demand from Americans and Europeans who have gone on a home electronics buying spree. The price to ship goods to U.S. customers on a 40-foot cargo container, meantime, more than tripled in July. The customer has to bear it or cut back on orders, Richardson said. Song Wenja, owner of Hand in Hand Electric Appliance Technology Company, a manufacturer of home appliances in Zhejiang, south of Shanghai, said that soaring cargo prices make it unprofitable to ship some goods. The combination of power outages and shipping delays might lead to a 20% fall in production this year, Song said. Among European companies grappling with snarled supply lines is Shoezone, a British retailer that sources most of its footwear from China. Shipping container prices have jumped at least fivefold in 12 months, said Anthony Smith, the chief executive. This will continue to impact us for at least a further 6 months until the issues being experienced in the whole supply chain return to more sensible levels, he said. Next, stock indices end wobbly day, mostly lower. Stocks closed mostly lower after wobbling most of Monday on Wall Street as the market comes off its first weekly loss in 6 weeks and investors move past the recent round of mostly solid corporate earnings. The S&P 500 fell less than 1 point or less than 0.1% to 4,682.80. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 12.86 points, or less than 0.1%, to 36,087.45. The NASDAQ fell 7.11 points, or less than 0.1%, to 15,853.85. Trading was choppy as rising and falling sectors rotated throughout the day. Energy companies started the day weak, but gained ground by late afternoon as U.S. crude oil prices reversed from losses to a slight gain. Chevron rose 2.3%. Utilities and makers of household goods, which are considered less risky, made some of the broadest gains. Bond yields rose. The yield on the 10-year Treasury rose to 1.63% from 1.58% late Friday. Communications companies were mixed after bouncing up and down throughout the day. Technology and healthcare stocks fell, countering gains elsewhere in the market. Investors are shifting their focus from the latest rounds of mostly solid corporate report cards to broader economic issues. That includes supply chain problems, rising inflation, and other issues that will determine the pace and breadth of economic growth throughout the rest of the year and into 2022. Smaller company stocks fell more than the rest of the market. The Russell 2000 fell 0.4%. You're going to see a lot of give and take in this market because of the uncertainty over inflation, said Megan Horniman, Director of Portfolio Strategy at Verdance Capital Advisors. It's going to be a much more challenging situation because people are anticipating a good holiday season, but are unsure about the catalyst for next year. Companies that rely on consumer spending, such as retailers, were mixed. Dollar Tree jumped 14.3%, following reports that activist investor Mantle Ridge plans to push the discount retailer to take measures to increase its stock value. Tesla continued sliding after CEO Elon Musk's latest move to sell a chunk of its stock. The electric vehicle maker's stock fell 1.9% on Monday and shed 15% last week. Investors will get an update on the retail sector this week as several big retailers report their latest quarterly results. Home Depot and Walmart will report on Tuesday, followed by Target on Wednesday and Macy's on Thursday. Wall Street will also get a broader view on spending trends when the Commerce Department releases its retail sales report on Tuesday. Investors will be watching for any signs that inflation is crimping business operations or consumer spending. Businesses have had to raise prices on a variety of goods to offset higher raw materials cost and are facing a wide range of supply chain problems. Consumers have so far taken price increases in stride, but analysts are concerned that they could start to pull back on spending because of the persistently rising inflation. Discouraging reports on inflation from the Labor Department last week tripped up the broader market and sent major indices to their first weekly loss in 6 weeks. Elsewhere on the market Monday, buyout news helped lift several companies. E-commerce mattress maker Casper surged 88.5% following news that is being acquired and taken private for about $308 million, less than a year after its public debut. Data center owners and operator Cyrus One rose 4.7%, and CoreSite rose 3.6% after announcing deals. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. 832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.